Okay. So there was a request that we should go over some of the highlights of yesterday because there was a lot of material, and we're going to try to build on it. So we'll do that together. We will try to chazer and build at the same time. So essentially, yesterday we highlighted really, I guess, three topics. One was just clarifying the Rambam Pshita about Akum and where there were three different points. Each one had its own aspect to it, but that essentially the Rambam prohibits Shechitas Akum for an affirmative reason because of the belief that, well, conceptually because of the belief that it's connected to idolatry, textually because of a pasuk in Kisisa that there is a concern apparently if he invites you and you eat from his Zavach, it's an inherent problem. While other Rishonim, working off the Tosefta apparently, maintain that it's a lack of Hechsher Shvita, that is not a status of Bar Zvicha. So that, there were three stages of this din, because the Rambam, his formulation would really presume that it would apply to an actual Oved Avodah Zarah, but maybe not to a non-Jew who's not an Oved Avodah Zarah, while for the other Rishonim, any non-Jew should be equally disqualified. This is going to be very significant, by the way, as we transition into Mummer, and that's a point that we've seen a little bit about, and we'll have to flesh that out soon. But the Rambam goes on to say that it applies even to a non-idolatrous non-Jew, but he has this language of geder gadol. It's a big geder that they made. So, see the Kesef Mishnah there, discusses, it sounds like it's a din derabbanan. It's possible still to say it's a din min ha-Torah, because as we discussed, there could be such a thing as a siag min ha-Torah. But one way or another, in the Rambam's formulation, it doesn't reflect the logic of the din as much, while the other Rishonim, there wouldn't really be reason to distinguish. And the third din, which we will add a little bit more to now, the Rambam in Hilchos Avos HaTumah, the Rambam says that, yes, we know that the Shechita of an Akum is Nevela, so Nevela should also be Metame. So the Rambam's formulation is Karv Be'enai. It seems to me, I'm close to being ready to say, I'm going to come out with a statement any day now, that I think that this is Drabbanan. And why is it Drabbanan? Because it's not like the other Rishonim would say, and like the Ravid quite assertively says over there.
Are you talking about Thomas Davila?
Yeah. The Ravid very assertively there has, even for the Ravid, strong language arguing on that logic. And the Ravid says, it's the Shechita is nothing. If the Shechita is nothing, it's a Nevela. Nevela is Metame Min HaTorah. So the Rambam, why does he not say like that? Because, and the way that he expresses some of this is in the Rambam's words itself, because he doesn't think the Shechita is nothing. He thinks the Shechita is theoretically something, and as far as the standards of Shechita, this could have worked. But there's an extra din that a Shechitas Akum has this separate concern of Yechalta Mizivcha. So therefore, that's the Torah telling you, no, don't be Ochel Mizivcha, you may not eat from his Shechita. So it's not a non-Shechita, it's a Shechita that's Aser to eat. So that, as the Rambam gives the comparison, it's like a treifa. If an animal is a treifa and you shecht it, so it's not going to be metame, and you're not allowed to eat it. So maybe the Shechita Sakum should be the same thing. So that's consistent with his logic of Soloveitchik in the Shiurim here, in the Shiuri Harav, which we'll say a little bit more from in a few minutes. So he adds that he thinks that the Rambam's also making here also kind of an affirmative point rather than a negative point, saying that essentially what the Torah is giving is the status of Avodah Zarah to this meat. And if that's the case, so then if Avodah Zarah, like the Rambam has in that halacha, he mentions that Avodah Zarah is only Mitami Midrabanan, so it doesn't make sense to say that this should be more chomer than that. That essentially, to put all the parts together, including his actual words and the Lamdisha understanding, what you come out with is that this Shechita is a Shechita that was perfectly fine as far as Hilchos Shechita are concerned. The animal is shechted. But the Torah specifically mentions that we're afraid of your eating from the zevach of an akum. So therefore, apparently, there is an iser min haTorah to eat from this shechita. But that iser emerges from the concern that there is an idolatrous component here. So when it comes to avodah zarah, the tuma is a gzeira derabbanan. So therefore, it would be appropriate to say here also it's a gzeira derabbanan and not the daraisa tuma that would come with a normal nevela. Okay, so far so good. So then we got into more possibilities about two other issues, maybe three other issues if you want to count it this way. And we tried to figure out the bar zvicha definition, which is not a problem for the Rambam, because the Rambam doesn't seem to have a concept of bar zvicha. And we don't know about it from any Talmudic source either. The Tosefta doesn't use that phrase, although it seems like it is hitting that point, the way the Tosefta says that it can't be that it was shechted on its own, can't be that it was shechted by a monkey. The Tosefta seems to be conveying some affirmative status that's necessary in order for shechita to be good. And presumably that's what the Rishonim call a bar zvicha. So we dealt with the question of, we know that a katan theoretically is good under the right circumstances. Gadol omed al gabav, we know that he didn't mess up anything. So how could a katan who's not obligated in mitzvahs, how could he be a bar zvicha? And an akum is not. And also, going in another direction, we know that tefillin require a bar kshira, and a katan is not considered to be a bar kshira in that context. So we dealt with a few answers that covered both questions, some that focused on one. So to focus for a second on the akum katan difference, there are many different nuances in the Rishonim, and I certainly encourage you, if you have the time, to look at them, and then nuances in the Achronim. Anything you have the time to look at is very much there for your perusal, and you're encouraged to. But in terms of what the most important aspects to focus on, is that many assume that even though a katan is not obligated in mitzvos and is not subject to any onesh, but the fact that a katan can't eat non-shechted meat is enough to bring him into the picture here. And there are different nuances about that. Is that nisa d'raisa? Is that nisa d'rabbanan? Is that limited only to Isurim, or does that include also positive mitzvos? Is that because of the mitzvah of chinuch, which is probably a d'rabbanan? Is that what brings it in? So there were a lot of different flavors of that particular perspective. And some who raise the question, now how could these answers be helpful if the katan's still not personally obligated? So why is he the bar zvicha? And also, if you say that it's a drabanan, does it make sense to say that you can be given a status of bar zvicha to shecht, it's kashrut min haTorah, if it's only coming from a rabbinical involvement? So what we wanted to suggest is that, yes, that could all work. And we mentioned just one point from the Chavetzal HaSasharim, who noted that it seems to be the inverse, at least for Tosfos' position. Tosfos, and again for this whole issue, we don't really have to worry about the Rambam. We mentioned that many Achronim maintain that maybe the Rambam, Davka, because of this question, doesn't hold from the concept of Bar Zvicha, because he essentially feels there isn't an answer to the question. But otherwise, we don't have to focus on the Rambam. So Tosfos, who does hold from Bar Zvicha, so the Tosfos on Gimel Amud Beis, this is the crucial Tosfos. Tosfos adds in here also Ochel Nevelos Lahachis. Somebody who's fully Jewish and fully commanded to eat from Shchutim, but nonetheless defiantly doesn't care about it, is also apparently not a Bar Zvicha. So the point was raised that according to Tosfos, it's not only about Sivoy, it's also about how you relate to it. Do you care about the sister or not? So maybe that's a basis to say the inverse, that even if somebody is not technically mitzuveh, but does care about it, does have to worry about it, let's say because of reasons midrabbanan, for example, maybe that is a bar zvicha. And what we suggested to continue building on our structure from day one, that the same way we can say to address the Yad HaLevi from the first week, that Shechita has values like avoiding Tzar Balei Chaim, but we don't require every time you kill an animal to do it this way. And that it seems to be that it's specifically connected to the delicate balance we have in terms of eating basar. So too, it could be that for a shechita to be meaningful, it has to be connected to the isser of eating basar without it. If there's no connection at all, that's not called a shechita. A shechita is one, it's not a take it or leave it kind of situation. But it has to be that it's specifically connected to the need for basar no other way. So maybe it does make sense to say Bar Zvicha has that broader kind of application. And then in terms of how to differentiate it between this and Kshira, so why do we say that when it comes to Kshira, the cutting is not going to be valid? So we had a couple of approaches to that. We mentioned the Noda Behuda, essentially, sees it really as a red herring. He thinks really the rules would be the same for both. And that is based on, and even though there are Rishonim who don't say like that, he argues on those Rishonim. But that really, Chinuch should be enough. So we're only talking about Ketanim Shigiyu L'Chinuch. Chinuch is enough to bring you into Shechita, and it should be enough to bring you into Kshira also, against the Mordechai and others who said, not that. Others suggested a distinction between a mitzvah chiyuvis, like tefillin, and a mitzvah kiyumis, like shechita. And Reb Chaim Olzer mentioned also that this kshira is not going to be relevant to this katan, because by the time he grows up, it's a new mitzvah of tefillin already, it changes every day. And when it comes to shechita, so this theoretically could be relevant to him. He could shecht an animal, put it in the freezer, and then by the time he comes to bar mitzvah and he's chayiv in mitzvos, so this is going to be available to him. Okay, so far so good. I think those were some of the major approaches to the kshira shechita distinction. So then we moved on to another topic, which we'll try to expand on now, but all still builds in a straight line. So what would be the din if you have two people doing the mice at the same time? One who's qualified and one who's not qualified. Two people holding on to the knife, or let's say two people holding on to the quill to write tefillin. Is that good or not? So logically, it seems intuitive to us, and this is discussed and advanced this way in the tshuva of Rav Nassim Gishtetner, in the tshuva of Lahoros Nassim, Perek Chelek Aleph Siman Dalet, that it depends. That if the individual who's not qualified is simply underqualified, we'll see that. Maybe this is a good way to use it. Are you underqualified or are you disqualified? And so underqualified means you don't have enough of a status, or disqualified means there's an external problem that you bring to the table. So is the individual underqualified or disqualified? If he's underqualified, so then somebody else participating, that could do it. If he's disqualified, so then he's going to disqualify even somebody else helping. So where does that bring us to then in terms of these different models? So let's say if you have a katan and a gadol shechting, so that we know is good. And even if the gadol wasn't holding on to the knife, but he was guiding things, it would already be good. So kal v'chomer would be good here. But there it follows well, because the katan is underqualified, so the gadol will make it effective. When it comes to shechita of a Jew and an Akum, so that would seemingly be dependent on the machlokas. According to Tosus and the Rush, the Akum is underqualified, so the Jew should be effective. According to the Shechita should be effective with the Jew. According to the Rambam, the Akum is disqualified, so the Shechita should be no good. And that's indeed his position. And when it comes to the Kshira, when it comes to writing Tefillin, the Katan is presumably underqualified, and therefore it should be effective if you would write it together with an adult. Okay, so far so good, yeah?
Which is the Tosfos says that the Akum is underqualified?
Right, because the Bar Zvicha means you need to be a Bar Zvicha, and if you're not, you're underqualified.
Even in Akum Mamish, like...
According to Tosfos, yeah, it's an underqualification. Now, Akum Mamish, even an idolater Mamish,
right, yeah.
If it's actively for Avodah Zarah, that's another story, but let's say just the personal status of this individual, that do we bring any presumption that he's doing any damage? According to Tosfos and the Rush, no. We just say it's not good enough.
This may be a little bit off topic, but just in general, do we make any distinctions between a Katan and a Gadol Akum?
So the Rambam says no. But his language is Afilu. So why is he saying Afilu? Because he's indicating that logically maybe you should have made a distinction. Right? That according to the Tosfos and the Rush, for sure it shouldn't be a distinction because he's no better than an adult Akum. So an adult Akum is lacking, a child Akum is for sure lacking. But the Rambam, he has this language of Afilu because maybe it's not so obvious, because if the concern is you're bringing in idolatrous intent, so then maybe the Katan doesn't have that problem. So his language, Afilu, it's the Chiddush to say that it should apply to a Katan also, and maybe that's also a part of the whole low plug Gzeres HaTorah here. God.
I was just going to comment that it could even be the opposite. Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't have das.
Country better. Yeah. Right. So that's why the Rambam says Afilu, presumably because it's a Chiddush. You could have logically come to the conclusion that maybe the Katanim are better. So according to the other Rishonim, it shouldn't be better. But according to Rambam, maybe it should be. So his language of Afilu is probably reflecting that. And especially then he goes on to say that it's kind of an across-the-board policy, even though it's rooted in this approach. So now, let's add a little bit of a twist to this issue. So to take it a little bit further, so we said, all right, it should all depend. If you believe it's an underqualification issue, so then the combination of the qualified guy and the underqualified guy works. Right, so on this issue of a Jew and a non-Jew shechting together, so Shulchan Aruch, we mentioned yesterday, Shulchan Aruch says it doesn't work, like the Rambam. And the Shach quotes others who disagree. Quotes the Or Zaruah and the Maharshal that it is effective. And on the surface, the Lamdas should be like we saw, like we said
yeah,
so far.
Yeah, what he's saying,
that it is effective to have a Jew and a non-Jew shechting together would be effective according to the Or Zaruah and according to the Maharshal. So on the surface, what's the machlokus about? The machlokus is like we said, that if it's perceived as a underqualification, then the Jew should help. If it's perceived as a disqualification, then the Jew shouldn't help. However, Soloveitchik in the Shiurim here, it's a safer people generally have. It's very useful. Okay, as are many wonderful Svarim. So, Rav Soloveitchik in the Shiurim on Shechita, Rav Soloveitchik observes that the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that it's no good, is actually based on the Rashba and the Taras Habayis. And the Rashba actually has the phrase that the Shechitas Akum is like a Shechitas Kof. It's like a Shechita of Curious George. Simply isn't anything. So it sounds like, how is the Rashba understanding it? Like an underqualification. So if it's an underqualification, a lack of a Bar Zvicha kind of status, so we thought until now that bringing the Jew into the process should do it. So why is that not the case yet? According to the Shulchan Aruch and the Rashba. Sir Soloveitchik introduces another element into this discussion, which, again, if you think of this as we keep adding on layers to the puzzle here, and this is a sugya that we'll have to return to. But what else could be the problem? You think about this for a second, that if the Akum does not bring any active disqualification, so why should the Jew and the non-Jew doing it together be worse than the Jew doing it by himself? Can you think of any other kind of issues? Yeah.
Practical?
Practical, okay, what do you mean?
Like, you are more likely to mess up.
So that might be a practical concern to stay on top of. But let's say you can watch it and you can see that it was, can see that it was done fine.
You told us that Mishnah and then Mumin Aleph, that's a pretty explicit, you know, against like Shtita L'Shem Avodah Zarah.
Okay, so if it's L'Shem Avodah Zarah, so that's one consideration. But let's say we don't know that it's L'Shem Avodah Zarah, so it's just Stam Akum and a Jew together with that. Maury?
Maybe just to connect to the Haktamah Shir, mm-hmm. I think I heard that Rav Rosenzweig had a mahalach with this also, that when we understand Shechita to be taken from Kavshim Kechulin, that maybe that and everything that it represents, as we understood by the Rambam, organized Shechita to be in Sefer Kedusha, mm-hmm. so that maybe just the Goy is not able to do that. It's not a Goy's mission. To now,
right, which would be very effective just to explain why he's not a barzicha, you know, from that perspective, and maybe even also to further differentiate him even from a cotton. But the question, okay, so it's not his mission, but the Jew is doing it with him, so why isn't that enough? So the question is, yeah.
I think this is true with the grace of Helpus Shabbos.
Oh, okay, yes.
Two people, like, you know, both carry, like, a pen.
Ah, okay. And excellent, yeah, so take it further.
With the non-Jew during the, it's like he's doing it completely.
Okay. So, it's like what?
Where it's like it's happening.
You were on a great track there, and then you took a stop at a station, and possibly taking a transfer to another one.
It's like he's doing it completely. It's like it's not being done at all.
Well, okay, yeah, closer. All right,
no
now,
doing
okay, now you're taking a bus back to the back. So you're on a very good track. Let's just build it on a little different direction. So Gilad correctly points out that in Hilchos Shabbos there is a halacha that shnayim shasauhu peturim. That if you have an action that would be a malacha, and two people did it together, so they are pater. This is a complex sugya, so just to call attention to some of the moving parts. In the most clear form, what we're talking about is an action that really is a one-man job, and you have two people doing it. So let's say if we're talking about hotzah, this commonly comes up in that context. So if you want to carry a pencil, leaving outside the muksa issues, you want to carry a pamphlet from inside to outside, and you have two people carrying it, that would be shnayim shasu. If you want to carry a sofa, that your putter, it's not mutter, but your putter mina onesh. Now, it's a big, there's a lot of nuances to that sugi, which is not so much for today. Figure the question maybe just prompted, is this only about Onesh, or is this about the Isser to begin with? Like, would you say that's not Asa Minat Torah, or would you say it's not subject to an Onesh? And among the details also, so if two people were to carry a sofa outside, you wouldn't have this Ptur, because carrying the sofa is a two-person job, at least. So that would be normal for two people to carry it. But if you have a situation where either one could carry it by himself, and they are kind of awkwardly, artificially carrying it as two. So that's where this concept applies. And the Gemara discusses, what if one could carry it by himself and the other one couldn't? How does that affect each one's status? But just to keep things relatively simple, so let's say you have a one-person job that's being done by two people, artificially. unnecessarily. So we say that that individual, both those individuals, are putter from the consequences of the Chilul Shabbos. So the question is, why is that? So what it sounds like, probably the most intuitive explanation, how would you explain it? Why would you think? Yeah?
It's like a form of, I forget the word.
Shinoi?
Yeah.
So it might be that it's a form of Shinoi, and there are Rishonim that have language like that. You know, this is not Kederach.
Right.
This is not the normal way to do it. But there are others who formulate it a little differently. And it might be more relevant to us if we formulate it a little differently. And there are those who would explain that neither party here is actually doing a maisa. Right? The action of Chilul Shabbos would be carrying this object outside. And neither party is really doing that. Each one is doing an incomplete maisa because he's doing something that isn't the normal way, isn't, I'm going to avoid using the Lashonah language again, but isn't what the action is. The action is carrying it, and you're not carrying it by yourself. Somebody else is carrying it. And that person is not carrying it by himself. You're carrying it. So it's arguable to say that neither one is doing a maisa. So, yeah, Yassi?
Is it, I mean, sounds kind of silly, but is it so simple to say that doing malacha is about the action, not the result?
Oh, very, very important question. Super important question. Hold on to it for a second. Okay, so, but let's just say abstractly, so if you want to say each one is not doing a maisa, so then, if that's the nature of the p'tur, so maybe that can be plugged in back to here. Because maybe we'll say that if the Jew is shechting by himself, okay, so he's doing the ma'aseh shechita. But if it's essentially shnayim shasu, you have the Jew and the non-Jew both doing the shechita, so then if it's really a one-person job, so then neither one is really doing a ma'aseh. So yes, it's true, the Akum doesn't bring any problems to the table, but he brings a lack of qualification, and the Maisa ultimately is not done by a qualified person. Now that is a very interesting possibility, and it could be relevant here, but it's important also to appreciate, as Yassi was indicating with this very important question, when does this apply and when does it not apply? Is Shnayim Shasa'u across the board? Is this a concept that applies Kol Torah Kula? So it happens to be there's a tshuva about this, Rav Shechter is fond of quoting. We mentioned yesterday the great Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel is a tremendous machaber with many, very many popular svarim. For some reason, his Sefer Shilas and Shuvis is much less well known than all of his other Svarim. Some of his Svarim are very, very commonly found and very commonly referred to. This one, for some reason, the Shuvis are not as well known, but in his Shuvis are called Ben Paras. In Simon Yud in Ben Paras, he talks about this question of is Shnayim Shaso a Kol Torah Kula concept or is it Davka Shabbos concept? It's difficult to say it's Davka Shabbos concept, parenthetically, because the Pasuk that the Gemara quotes is not from the context of Hilchos Shabbos, but that's a whole different discussion. So, fascinating. So, again, it's a little bit outside of our scope, but just to take the parts that are relevant. So, maybe if you want to say this applies to everything, okay, so then maybe it's relevant here too. If it does not apply to everything, so then what does it apply to? Right, how would you decide when this concept is relevant and when it's not relevant? So, presumably, it goes to the definition of a maisa, and therefore, maybe it's relevant when the halacha requires a maisa. If the halacha does not require a maisa, or the aveira, whichever it is, the mitzvah or aveira, does not focus on a maisa, so then maybe there is no such thing as shnayim shaso affecting it. But if we define Shnayim Shaso as undermining the Maisa, it's not a Maisa if two people are doing a one-person job. So then in the areas of Halacha where Maisa is important, it's going to matter. Okay, so far so good? So Yossi, very much to the point, raised the question Is it so true that in Hilchos Shabbos that's the case? So that happens to be a very involved sugya, but the short summary of it for now, say there is a lot of basis to say that yes, that Shabbos is defined, Chilul Shabbos is defined as doing a Maisa, and anything that doesn't qualify as a Maisa is not going to be Chilul Shabbos Min HaTorah. So to say it very briefly, so some of the Achronim raised the question, why is it that Amir al-Akum is only also Midrabanan? You're not allowed Midrabanan to ask a non-Jew to do Melacha for you on Shabbos. Why don't we say it should be Asur Min HaTorah? If the Torah doesn't want you doing Melacha on Shabbos, so to get a non-Jew to do Melacha for you and to make it happen should be just as bad. So apparently many Achronim have a principle, not everyone agrees. If you want, there's a fascinating essay about this by Rav Zevin in his Sefer Lor HaLacha, where he actually takes the opposite view. But many big Achronim assume that Chilul Shabbos requires a Maisa. And if it's not going to have a Maisa, then it's going to be an Issa D'Rabbanan or something else. So then, fine. So you need a Maisa to be Mechal Shabbos in the full sense. And this is not called a Maisa. Then it could be that Shechita maybe has the same din. And that's going to be affected by some of the other things that we'll see about how Shechita comes about. And there's going to be a lot of overlap. There's a lot, actually, of overlap between Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Shechita in terms of actions and indirect actions and the like. And we will, Bez Hashem, be blessed to see this in this fascinating parak, which HaKol Bo. But it's possible to say that Shechita requires a Maisa. And therefore, if it's done together with a disqualified, even an underqualified individual, then in a Shnayim Shoso kind of situation, it's not a Maisa, and therefore it's not going to work. Question about that?
Yeah, I guess, how do we define Maisa in the sense that...
Well, that's going to be an open sugya in this paragraph. I'm going to talk about it.
Presumably, there's still some connection to the result, because then you'd be chayav for like an attempted Maisa, like that's... I don't know the halacha about. If you try to write a letter and you do the action of
siva, right?
But then whatever, your pen's out of ink or something.
Yes, so if you don't actually do in a normal bezdin or korbanos function, you have to actually commit the avera to be chayiv, even if you try. You know, but klape shmaya, there's a lot to discuss.
In general, is it possible to have maisa without the result?
Presumably not. If the Maisa doesn't bring about the result,
then it's not considered.
Right. But I don't want to speak too broadly because I should go into the specific examples. And we'll see more about what's considered to be a Maisa in terms of Shechita. But that was how Soloveitchik approached this issue, so it's a big twist on what we said till now, that it seems logical to say that if a person is underqualified, then the presence of somebody qualified would help. But to explain this Rashba, that seems to split the difference on the two issues. So he offers this possibility that it's not going to be considered a Maisa, and therefore that's where you're going to have a problem. So basically we're out of time, so what I'm going to do is just quickly review that. I'm going to introduce the next point. We'll give you more cards for tomorrow so you can think about this. So what if you have a Jew and a non-Jew? What if one is doing it on behalf of the other? And does it make a difference which one is which? Who you put in the boss's seat and who you put in the worker's seat. So that'll give you some recovers for tomorrow, and we'll see how that impacts this issue. But just to quickly review what we spoke about, so a lot of it was review itself, so we won't review that, but we just took the conversation a little bit further with the following point, that if we say, like it seems logical, that we want to know what's the status of a qualified person and someone else doing an action together, so it seems logical to say that if the issue is under qualification, then it should be good. If the issue is disqualification, it shouldn't be good. That was the way it was discussed in the Tshuvas L'Haris Nasan. That seems to work for a lot of the positions in the Rishonu and the like. And that seems to be behind the machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch, who says it's no good in the case of Shechita with a non-Jew, and the Shach's quotation of the Orz Aruah and the Marshal, who say it is good. One would think it's about that. However, Soloveitchik added to the equation that the Shulchan Aruch is based on the Rashba, and the Rashba was therefore saying it's no good, so you'd think it's a disqualification problem. But the Rashba himself has the language of Shechitas Akum is like a kof, meaning essentially it's an underqualification problem. So how do you make that work? Underqualified, but the Jew's presence doesn't help? So the Rav suggested, and Gilad and Yossi played important parts in fleshing this out, that maybe we can look to Hilcha Shabbos, and we see that in Hilcha Shabbos there is a din of Shnayim Shaso, that if two people do a one-person job together, they are putter. Lots of nuances to that question, whether it means that it's mutter or just putter, whether it distinguishes between if it's a one-person job for one guy and a two-person job for the other guy, that's all kinds of complications. But the simplest form is two people doing a one-person job, so you're putter. Sounds like this is a din in not being a maisa. So then the question is, what does that apply to? We mentioned that Rav Yosef Engel with Ben Paras has a discussion. This applies to Kol Torah Kula, but we know that it applies to Shabbos and applies to a few other contexts. Maybe it's contexts that are specifically Maisa dependent. If it requires a Maisa, for good or for bad, then if it's not a Maisa, it's two people doing it together, it's not a Maisa, and that's a problem. So in Hilcha Shabbos, we mentioned this is a huge discussion, but there is a big school of thought that says, indeed, Chilul Shabbos is all about a Maisa, so this would work well. And when it comes to Shechita, that's very possibly the case as well, and we'll see that in some developing sugyas. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and should be only good things. All right, Keshe Kav.